where we stopped yesterday, and we talked about service-oriented architecture, where we, instead of having tightly coupled distributed applications, we have something like loosely coupled. Everything is organized as services, and these services may be used by applications or other services. Therefore, in that sense, we have a machine-to-machine or application-to-application interface, and not like in the web, where you have a human and then the human-machine interface. If we look at web services, that's basically an implementation of the service-oriented architecture and based on web technologies. And web technologies, there we mean the protocol HTTP, we mean things like XML and so on. And in the following few parts of the course, we will talk more in detail about web services. Let's take the characteristics and let's look at an informal definition of it. First of all, web services, they can live anywhere in the network. That means you can access them via the internet. It's not restricted to an intranet environment. Then they have a self-describing a self-description of the web service. Therefore, in that sense, they use something like a service description language in context of web services. That's basically WSDL and web service description language, and it's an XML based language. The self-description includes all the necessary things to interact with the service. Therefore, in that sense, you have the messages which can be sent to the to a web service. It also basically provides information about the messages sent back from the web service. It includes which transport protocols are supported. It provides information where it's located. It has information about data types and data formats supported by the web service. And on the other hand, the implementation detail, that's basically hidden. Therefore, in that sense, we only know the signature of the web service, but not really the implementation of it. An important aspect is how to find a service, and therefore, in that sense, you have a registry or something like a directory service. And web service, therefore, in that sense, they have a declared API, and then we can basically interact with the web service and request functionality or request operations and get the results of it. And the web service, in that sense, it's basically the entry point to a remote service. And therefore, it's we can see of it to the outside. The webs, it's known as the web service, which provides the signature and the interface, but anything else like the implementation or something like that, that's basically hidden underneath. What you have here is the integration. Certainly, you can use it within the organization and within the departments of the organization. In the past, it was very often in a way that you had the human resource department, you had the finance department, you had the product department, then the research department, and they all basically had their own IT infrastructure. And it was very difficult to share information across these departments. And that's one of the goals with web services. You can basically communicate also across department boundaries. And then you can make the next step and also cross organizational boundaries. And that's especially interesting also with like car manufacturers, where the car manufacturers have a very tight interaction with the car supply companies like Bosch or other suppliers, which basically produce very significant portions of a car. And therefore, in that sense, it's very interesting to cross organizational boundaries. The features here, it's programmable. It's a programmable interface. It's self-descriptive, what I mentioned before with WSDL. It's an encapsulation. Therefore, in that sense, it has an autonomous behavior. And all the necessary pieces of information are encapsulated within such a web service. Therefore, in that sense, it's a component which basically has all the required things with it. And if somebody else, another web service or an application, wants to use functionality, it has to provide parameters, but then the rest of the data are basically used from the internal data store. And therefore, in that sense, if the parameters, there's no nothing like a global store. It's like what you had with if you do C programming, where you have these global data storage in the sense of things defined in a header file, where all the parts of your application can directly access this global store. That's not the case here. It's all encapsulated in the application component, and if you need something additional, you have to send it via the parameters in the message. It's loosely coupled, and it's platform independent and also language neutral. And therefore, with web services, it does not really make any problem that you say, well, your web service you implement with Java, and the application which invokes the web service uses C++ or uses C# for the web service. If the requester adheres to the interface and sending the right messages, then everything is fine. It does not make any difference if there's a C# or C++ application behind it. It can live anywhere. It's location transparent and also protocol transparent. In the most cases, it uses HTTP because HTTP does not have any problems with firewalls, because usually the firewalls are open for HTTP requests, but it could also use other protocols like SMTP or like FTP. You could use any protocol you wanna use on an application level. But it has to be known on both sides. Therefore, it's an important part in the metadata in the WSDL file, which protocols are supported. And you can also combine it to multiple web services to a new web service. The loosely coupled, component-oriented, and cross-technology. I mean, that's basically all already included before. And here it's more like it's document-centric. Therefore, request and response are documents. And they are web document. And in that sense, therefore, it's you sending documents more or less back and forth. If you have a request for functionality, it's basically the request document. And if you look at the reliability, also which is defined in the context of web services, it's basically to make the request documents or response documents reliable. And we don't really talk about the reliable execution of the implementation behind it. It's more like how reliable do you make these documents which are exchanged as part of messages going back and forth. And the properties are usually attached with the document and not really the implementation of it. The web service and distributed objects, you could think of, well, isn't a web service basically just a distributed object? And certainly you can think of it, both web services and distributed objects have some sort of description language. And if you think of object, there it's basically this IDL, this interface description language, and usually you use that, as I had with RPC, where I described the interface between the different application components, and they use an interface definition, or sometimes they call it description language. Here with web services, certainly you use WSDL as the description language. And what do you have in it, what operations we have, signatures, return types, exceptions, and also how to make an invocation. That's in both cases in it. And there's more in it in WSDL than it is in IDL. We have also generate stops. We'll later see for web services. We have also the possibility to use an interface, and from the interface we derive the WSDL file, the interface of a remote of remote objects. We have the well-defined network interactions, and have similar mechanisms for registering and discovering the components, like RMI. It's very easy, the RMI registry, to register objects. In the same way, we have UDDI to register web services. Well, we have a difference. Web services are usually stateless computing. And if you need state, we need something like cookies for state. And otherwise, it behaves like a regular web browser and web server. And therefore the close relationship. Distributed objects have usually a stateful computing. And web services are for the integration into the web. And that means in the internet environment. Distributed objects are usually in the intranet, and all the firewalls are in a way that you can make remote method invocation. Across the internet, very often you can't make any remote method invocation. The ports are usually closed. And therefore, in that sense, you need something like web services. The architecture, here I have the official definition from W3C, that's basically the official definition, and therefore in that sense important, it can be identified by an URI, that means a uniform resource identifier. URL is an example for that. And it has the public interfaces, and the bindings are basically described by XML. And that's what we use here WSDL for. And we have the possibility to discover it. In that sense, we have something like a registry, which we can query, and then we get an information that web service of that type exists. And then afterwards, we have an interaction with the web service using XML-based messages. And the web services, we can say, well, it incorporates these four technologies, which basically are standards: XML to tag data, SOAP to transfer data, WSDL to describe the service, and UDDI to basically list the service. And in that sense, we can actually say a web service is something like a remote procedure call over the internet using XML messages. And that is something like a simplified view of it. And it has several advantages compared with an RPC. An RPC has a tight coupling. Therefore, if you want to change one thing, you very often have also to change also the other parts and stop the distributed application and restart it. Here with a web service, everything is self-contained. You can take a web service out of business. You can take a new web service into business. And then if it's found via the registry, then basically it can be used. Therefore, in that sense, you don't have any stop of the distributed application. It's only that you make a stop of the web service and restart it and things like that with a new version of it. If you look at the interoperability stack, on the lowest level you have the transport, and this is not the transport layer of the internet protocols. The transport layer of the internet protocols comes here. TCP or UDP, depending what you want to use for. That's the transport layer of the protocol hierarchy. Here, if we look at web services, we say, well, for transport, we use HTTP or SMTP. For messaging, we use XML, SOAP, to transport it from A to B. And web service addressing, that means you use something like URI or URL to address a web service. The description, meta information, using web service description language. Here you store it in a registry, and you can attach policies with it. The quality, well, you can have security with request response documents. you can bundle web service interactions, and that would be an interesting example would be something like you invoke a web service with a hotel, a web service for a car reservation, and a web service for a flight reservation, and then you can bundle that into a single transaction. And if one of that is not successful, because, for example, you didn't get a flight, then you also don't really book a hotel or rent a car if you don't have the flight to get to the target. And then on a compositional area, you have a business process language, execution language for web services. That means you can compose web services into a more complex web service, and with people for web services, you can define in what sequence the web services are executed or invoked. Are they sequentially? Can you do it in parallel? And then the results come together, and so on. And therefore, in that sense, it's you define more or less the workflow between the web services. And WS notification, that's a method to use publish and subscribe of messages to get notified by in a web services environment. There exists a whole bunch of other possibilities. Then the basic architecture, when we look at it, the functions, what we have is basically all the interaction is done via messages, and it's not indirect. No implicit interaction via a joint data store. It's all via messages. And therefore, in that sense, exchanging messages, describing a web service, and publish and discovering it. And the interesting things of it that you have certainly the possibility here with WSDL and SOAP. And WSDL, I mentioned already here, message formats, data types, protocols, location, and so on. That's all part of it. The important part of it, when we look at it, the service and service description, we can say the web service is basically an interface. And the implementation of it, that's a service. And the service description, it's basically just the interface, and that's the service description, and the implementation is a service. And here, usually to the outside, only that part is visible. And that's the way how other applications make use of it. And the implementation, that means how the functionality is achieved, how the functionality is done, is it efficient, non-efficient, and so on, that's not really visible. Here, the roles, certainly we can go quickly over it. You have a service provider, discovery agency, and a requester. Service provider, you can have two perspectives, like in the sense of you have something like a business perspective, and that's more or less the owner of the service. And you could have also an architectural perspective, and that would be something like the platform where it's running off. So here, platform, and here, who is the owner of the service. And in that sense, it's depending on it. And the same thing with the perspective. We can also have a business perspective and an architectural perspective. In here, we would say business perspective, that's basically the customer which wants to use the service, or the architectural perspective, as here, architectural, that would be here the application invoking the web service, as here, application. And here, business perspective, who is actually paying for it, for its use. I mean, there are a number of web services where you have to pay for it. There are web services which are free. And for example, if you use certain Google web services, they are free as long as you don't make, if you don't exceed the limit of invocations per certain time limit. That could be per day or something like that. For example, Google Maps or whatever exists, has a web service interface, and you can use it, integrate it in your own environment, as long as you don't use, that you don't make too many calls. If you use too many calls, then basically you have to make a business arrangement with Google and certainly pay for it. The service discovery, that's the registry, and there you can have something like the binding plays here an important role. As here, binding, and it can be a static binding during development, as here, static during development, that you already include which web service you use in your application, or you can make it basically dynamic. And dynamic means here during execution. As here, during execution, and then the registry could return different web service interfaces depending on the situation. That, for example, it has multiple web services providing the same functionality, and it could decide, depending on the load and the performance, to return either one of the available web services. And therefore, in that sense, you have something like a dynamic binding. And the operations, yeah, that's basically I already mentioned with publish the service, then here find this web service, and then interact with it. And here's the service description, here's the service description, and then basically import the service description and use the interface. Therefore, in that sense, that's all the things we already looked at it beforehand. The important also, the find, you have two times where it plays a role. One is at design time, and the other one is at runtime. Design time, that's something relevant for the designer of the application, that it basically looks around what kind of web services are available and what kind of web services can I reuse. And therefore, in that sense, when the at design time, the semantic description of a web service is rather important, because then the designer can decide and say, okay, that's exactly the functionality I need. If you only have an XML description of the data types and the interfaces, then it makes it rather difficult for the designer to find out what kind of functionality the web service really provides. And when you think of it, a web service, and it's called geographic location. Well, that doesn't help you very much as a user if you want to use something like geographic functionality in your application using a foreign web service. What does it mean? What kind of geographic coordinates do you have to provide? There are all kinds of different information which are necessary. Are they? What is the zero point from the geographic coordinates, and so on? Therefore, in that sense, you need a whole bunch of semantic description which are rather targeted also towards the designer to decide, can I use the web service or do I need to use another one, or do I have to build my own component? At runtime, here the invocation is relevant. The invocation and also the messages. That's more an automatic part of it, and also that a protocol supports it. And therefore, in that sense, it's on a much lower level of technology, and it's not so much on a semantic level what kind of functionality it provides. It's more on the functionality of messages, message formats, and location. Next thing is standard technologies. Here, the SOAP stands for Simple Object Access Protocol, as I didn't mention it before. Here, the we'll look at the steps. When you look at it, here you send a WSDL file with a service description using SOAP. Here you make a query using SOAP. Here you get the answer of the discovery agency, the registry. Then you get the WSDL file using SOAP to send it. Here you make the request and the response using again SOAP. Therefore, in that sense, SOAP is the basic way of transporting messages between the involved parties. And SOAP uses here a very simple way of also representing then XML messages and transport them. Certainly, it's not necessary that you put everything in UDDI. You could also use, like in a Java environment, JNDI, the Java naming and directory interface, you could, what else do we have here? Yeah. The one thing what I wanted to, and that's I want to basically make on the next page, one of the advantages, if you think of RPC, that's very easy to see here. The point is here, the WSDL file gives information about what kind of requests are handled and also what kind of parameters are supported. These are basically the function call, the parameters from you for your operations. And like customer info request, name, phone, street, city. The same, more or less the same WSDL file you sent here. And here you have here, that's the request, that's the response. Here you send the request with your data, and then comes the response back depending as it was defined in WSDL. The important part of it to, we can say tags are used to identify the parameters. Identify parameters of request. And if you think of the RPC, that was a binary interface. Therefore, we had we basically just said a binary stream of information. And then the receiver has to know exactly how long such a binary representation of the parameter was or is to make the cut and say, well, this is parameter 1, this is parameter 2, this is parameter 3. If you change the order at the sender, at the provider, then the request is out of luck, except if you also change it here. Here also the response, they are also tagged. It has the disadvantage that the messages are rather large, because if you look at RPC or RMI, the only thing what is sent in RMI, it's basically an identifier, a code for the response. You sent the string Huber 289 and the whole telephone number, that string, that string. This, this, or this end, you don't really send. Therefore, in that sense, a regular RPC, it's much more space efficient. But on the other hand, it's not flexible. Here, what happens, if you change the provider and say the provider also returns now birthday. And now it adds 10th of October 1980 and then here birthday or date of birth. And this one has no idea what to do with it. What happens when you have an XML processor? All the tags which it does not understand, it ignores. And therefore, in that sense, if you extend this, send the date of birth, this one has no idea what to do with it, it just ignores it. Therefore, in that sense, you have a very flexible environment. When you want to do that with an RPC environment, it means you change this here and do a recompilation. Stop this here, do a recompilation, which also includes now in the data stream this here, and then possibly you throw it away because you have no idea what to do with the application except the application accepts it, otherwise, but the interface here has to accept it. The interface here on web services just ignores it. And that's something which is in the power of web services, because now you're in an environment where you have provider, requester. The provider does not really know all the requesters, because you as a private person or as a company have a web service available, and then anybody can use it, and it's possibly open source or the public domain, and you don't really care about all your requesters, and therefore if you change something here, put additional features in it, well, the other ones can still continue to use it. And that's, I think, some of the power of web services, which you have with flexibility. The last thing here with message exchange patterns, and what you have here is the everything, as I mentioned, is message-based. You have the possibility in the sense of one-way request response or the broadcast. Certainly request response, that's a typical interaction mode what you have in a client-server environment. And one-way would be something like in a statistic environment that you send, for example, statistics to a web service, which basically captures them, collects them, and then make statistics out of it. The other way you can look at it is this way: peer-to-peer, direct interaction, and intermediary. Peer-to-peer, here, every service request, every service provider is also a service requester. Here also, the service provider is also a service requester. Therefore, in that sense, you have service descriptions on both ends, and you have on both ends find and publish. And it's more or less that you would have web services on both sides, on the client and server side, in the same way as we have with peer-to-peer interaction. The next one with direct interaction, that's a special case with the situation that you don't have a separate discovery agency. Therefore, the service provider publishes its service description, and this one stores it, the requester. And therefore, the requester immediately can very easily use it. And therefore, in that sense, this one publishes all its functionality to a potential requester. And then the requester can just check what kind of web services are available. The last thing is this intermediary. And that's very often what you find in a situation of organizational boundaries. And so here, that's very often organizational boundaries. And it's more like something like a firewall going through. And what's happening here is that the intermediary takes the request and then looks at the header and then decides if it propagates the request or basically filters that request out. And intermediary might have additional functionality like security. Therefore, in that sense, it might, for a web service request, it might ask for authentication. Also hier authentication. The other thing is, it provides support for routing or routing. In that sense, if you have multiple service providers within the intranet, it can decide where to propagate it. And management, that's something like, well, keeping track of all the calls, keeping track of the load, and so on. And usually, when you have a web service request, as we will later see, we have something like a header and the content. The intermediary only works on that part and not really on the content part. And therefore, it might change things because routing would require that the document would be routed to a different service provider within the organizational boundaries, and therefore, in that sense, it might change your routing information. Good, that's this here, the simple. Actually, what I can do is here, I can stop